Soon.
This is Tractor Tuesday Live, hosted by sixth-generation Nebraska farmer and Tractor Tuesday founder Zach Bosley and Scott Anderson, owner of New Age Ag Supply. Join them each week as they sit down with farmers, innovators, dealers, and creators who are enhancing the culture within agriculture, right here on Tractor Tuesday Live.
Hey, Zach Bosley. We're here live at the Tractor Tuesday headquarters here in beautiful Nebraska. Today, we've got an interesting guest here, and it's somebody I never expected would make the trek all the way to the great state of Nebraska. So without further ado, we've got our friend of the business here, Fabian Hambuchen. I hope I said that better.
Yeah, it's quietly like the first time an American pronounced my last name really, really good.
Well, you know, and my guys here on the team, they all know I'm very proud of my German heritage. So with all that, this is crazy for us because we have a lot of athletes, a lot of friends of the show, in theory, just people we met over the years in athletics. They come on and a lot of them, you know, work in the equipment space. Maybe they're in the software industry one way or the other. But I don't think ever will we ever have someone of your status on the show again, because for a lot of the folks in Nebraska and throughout the Midwest that are watching, you know, we're sitting right here with an Olympic gold medalist, and it's pretty wild, your story. So for our audience here paying attention to the United States, you know, Fabian, how would you even start this story?
Wow, it's hard because it's been like a really, really long time. Mm-hmm. So I was doing gymnastics. My dad was my coach. He was a gymnast. He had the chance to go to Olympics once in his life. That was in 1980 in Moscow, where the Western countries did the boycott. And he's from West Germany, so he couldn't go there. But nevertheless, he became a coach, and he was super ambitious in that. And my older brother was also a gymnast. So when I grew up, I wanted to do what my older brother was doing.
Right.
So I ended up quite fast in a gymnastics gym and fell in love with the sport. And from there on, we just worked hard. And I was always chasing my dreams.
Well, what's so interesting is, you know, your first big breakthrough, I think you were just 15, turning 16 when you made it to your first Olympics. Now, was that 04? Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 2004, when we were first Olympics. The funny story behind that is, like, 4 years before in Sydney, 2000, I was 12 years old and I watched the Olympics on TV, and I saw that I could be there from the level of my gymnastics already. Oh, I was so good with 12 years that I could compete with the adults over there, but I was just too young. So at the same time, it was great motivation for me to know 4 years more and I can be an Olympian.
Right.
So that pushed me quite hard. And with 15, I was competing at my first world championships with the senior national team. That was in California, in Anaheim, my first worlds. I was 15. And then the year later, when I was 16, I went to the Olympic Games in Athens, and that was awesome. I made it right away to individual finals. I got seventh place on the horizontal bar, which was a great success. At this time, I knew I had a tiny little chance for a medal, but I didn't stick my dismount, and that made the difference at these times for a medal or not. But nevertheless, that was a great thing, and my breakthrough in the media and everything, which was kind of weird, because also in your business, you know how that is. When you're second place, you're the first loser.
Right. Yeah.
So why did they pay so much attention on the seventh place at this time?
Yeah.
That was quite weird. But the thing is, between 96 and 04, German gymnastics was kind of dead.
Yeah. You know,
nothing happened there. And with me, there was hope.
Yeah.
There was hope again that this little kid, 16-year-old, if that would stay healthy, probably he can bring Germany back on top with his gymnastics. So this was the thing. And I was wearing glasses during the Olympics at this time, because I had contacts, but I crashed all of them right before the Olympics, and I had no chance to get new one in this short period of time. So I took my glasses out. I was used to do it with glasses till I was 14, and just had my glasses, looked like Harry Potter. The media called me Harry Potter of gymnastics and stuff like that. I had like a band behind my glasses to fix it, and then I went out there and compete, you know. And all these things made a nice, funny story for the media. So that was my breakthrough.
Yeah.
And from there on, you know, I was working hard and getting more and more successful.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, so now maybe I'm wrong, but with the translation of it all, is the horizontal bar, is that the same as what we say in the States as the high bar?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, cool. I just wanted to make sure I was tracking because obviously you met me. I have kind of a height issue where, number one, I wouldn't be talented enough anyway, but, you know, it's just, it's such an amazing sport and all the work that you guys have to put into it. It's just so much dedication. You know, at that age, you know, when you were 12, what was your day-to-day training? How extreme was it at that point to get you up to speed to potentially do what you did at 16?
I mean, I was still in school, you know, I was still in school. And I haven't gone to a sports school or something because I wanted to stay at home. I wanted to be coached by my dad. So I didn't want to leave our little town because for the sports schools and all the stuff, I had to go to bigger cities. So we decided to manage everything on our own. So my mom took a lot of care, like all of the school stuff, all of the medical part, because she came from the medical side. And so like school in the morning, 4 to 4.5 hours training in the afternoon. That was like my daily business.
Was it damn near 7 days a week then with the training? Or
No, it was like 5 to 6 times a week.
Okay.
At some point, I had a kind of a rest afternoon on Wednesdays.
Okay.
But then it was Monday to Saturday through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got seventh place. You know, you're kind of the new poster child, the new it one, you know, for all the sports in Germany. You know, being such a young person, you got a ton of media attention on you. And how did that really change anything with your routine? Because I imagine you get done with your first ever Olympics and you're back in high school. So was that a hard situation to get back to normal?
Yeah.
I'm sure the girls were already bugging you already, but then you come back and you've got the celebrity, you know, coming back to school.
Yeah.
How did you get back into more so civilian life, if you will?
I would say my first test in math brought me back to reality because, as you said, you know, I had my breakthrough in the media when I was 16 at the Olympics. I just came back and my mom was tough. I was landing in the morning and on my way back home, she dropped me off at school. She was like, "You're back, go to school, guy."
Oh,
I was like, "Okay, let's do it." And of course, when you got this experience of, you know, being someone at this point in this media world or in Germany. I mean, Germany is a small country. So I felt like, okay, I know who I am, nose up, and let's go.
Yeah.
And that, of course, didn't work out, fortunately. Then I got really bad grades in the beginning. And I went home and I was so upset about the teachers and everything.
Yeah.
And my mom at some point said, "Hey, it's not about the teachers. It's about you."
Okay.
And I started to discuss with her and argue with her. But at some point she was just like punching on the table and said, "Stop it. Come back to earth, man."
Yeah.
And that helped me so much. I'm so grateful for that, that my parents had been on my side for the whole career, supported me and also watched out for things like that. And immediately when you become a little bit more popular, of course, there are a lot of people who want to be close friends with you
for
any reason. Yeah. And I had to learn to be like really like sensitive in all these things, like friendships, and to figure out, is this person really interested in me as a human being, in my character, or just in this popular figure in Germany, you know? So that was quite hard in the beginning, but with the school situation, I think that helped a lot to, you know,
be grounded.
To stay grounded. And, from there on, I felt like, okay, I know who I am. I know that life is not changing at all.
Yeah.
And I'm still just like privileged that I can make a job out of my hobby, you know, and that I can do what I really love to do. And this is gymnastics.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, of course I finished high school. I graduated from there. But after that, I was professional first, you know, and but all these experiences helped me to realize that, you know, it's just sports, you know, it's just sports. Yeah. And the reason why I started with it is because I had fun as a little kid.
Right.
So why should that change my personality at all? Even if I have success, I'm just a same guy as before.
Yeah.
And I can be really grateful and really blessed and happy to have the opportunity to do a sport on this high level and to experience so many beautiful things.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, as an American, we look at the Olympics every 4 years. And when I was a kid, you know, you just think that, oh, well, then they take 3.5 years off and then they're back at it in the Olympics. We don't quite understand the complexity, especially in gymnastics of the sport. There really is no off season, because don't you have like your own professional league basically in Germany and then throughout Europe? Or how does that transition once the games are over? You know, you walk away. How quick do you get back into the swing of things with your sport?
I mean, from your mindset, it's like after the games, it's before the games,
yeah.
You know, right away.
Yeah.
I mean, usually you come back from the games, and in my sport, fortunately, you can have a vacation afterwards. Mm-hmm. Some other sports, they have maybe like world championships coming up right after the Olympics.
Yeah.
Or like in winter sports, their season is still going on for two more months, you know?
Yeah.
So in gymnastics, usually after the Olympics, we can have a break for like 2 weeks or something, and that's it. And then you keep going, you know? Then you have some more international competitions in that year. But usually, like the years between the Olympics, we have... Like when you're from Germany, we have European championships, you have world championships. Besides of that, there are a lot of different World Cup events and stuff like that. You have the league, what you mentioned. I mean, we don't have NCAA in the US, but it's like a different way, like in soccer, Bundesliga.
Yeah.
People know that probably more. We have something like this in gymnastics.
Okay.
So there are plenty of competitions. And as you said, honestly, there's no off season. You have to take your off season really seriously. At some point, you need to recover and rest.
Yeah.
But usually, it's just like going through year by year.
Yeah. So then there's obviously a lot of hype, a lot of expectations from you. You know, you're kind of the young face. You did what you did. There's ambitions of that great team in 96 or, you know, one individual in particular. So the next Olympics coming to shape out, I guess, where were you at in your mind and how were you training? And, I guess tell us about your next stint at the Olympics.
I mean, the time between Athens and Beijing, 2004 to 2008, that was one of the most intense times in my life, because first this breakthrough in the media, then I got more and more successful. Like the year after Athens in 2005, I got first time European champion on the high bar with the adults. Then 2006, I made two bronze medals at Worlds. And then 2007, I got European champion. I graduated from high school in the same year.
Okay.
So like European championships had been between my exams,
the
written and the, how do you call the other?
Verbal, oral.
Verbal oral exams. So it was right in the middle between of that. And I got the European champion and West European champion in the all around. And then the biggest goal in that year was World Championships in Stuttgart in Germany.
Yeah.
So I went there, I was done with school, I was happy. So the last like 3 months before Worlds, I was just focusing on the sport.
Yeah.
Went to Japan for training because the Japanese guys, they're like the top guys in gymnastics. So I went there almost every year to work out with them, to learn from them and get myself ready for Worlds. And then I had the best time ever. We got third with the team. I got silver in the all around and I made the gold on high bar. So I was the world champion in my hometown, which was just like one of the most exciting and emotional moments in my athletic career. And then I got sportsman of the year in Germany. So it was the maximum you can become in Germany, you know, but it was setting the pressure quite high for the next year for the Olympics in Beijing. And I was 20 years old. I thought after the Worlds in Germany, nothing can happen to me. I was mentally so strong. I was so good prepared. So I don't care if there are like 20,000 people sitting in this gym in China.
Yeah.
I just going to do the same. So that was kind of my attitude. And I was pretty much self-confident, maybe a little bit too much.
Okay.
And then I went to Beijing. Physically, I was 100% on my peak.
Yeah.
I was so good. I was so fit. Never been in that shape again. But mentally, I missed my mental training at these times because of this self-confidence and the thinking about I made it in Stuttgart, what should happen in Beijing, you know?
Right.
So, but unfortunately, I couldn't handle the pressure mentally, you know? I went out there, I felt like every little second, it was eating me up, you know, that pressure. So I got injured in team finals. We got fourth place with the team, which was sad. I mean, we're kind of an individual sport.
Right.
Sure. It's not like soccer, like football, where you can pass the ball, ball to someone else. Of course, it's an individual sport, but still we compete as a team. We prepare as a team. We try at least to support each other by, you know, cheering for the other one and whatever. And so it was really sad just to become fourth place. Then I got injured in this competition, which was really crashing my all-around final the next day. So I got seventh there instead of making another medal there. Then I was the guy with the most individual finals. I was also in the final on floor, on p-bars, and on high bar. So and everywhere I had a chance for a medal, and maybe also more than just one gold. I ended up fourth on floor, fourth on p-bars. And then last chance, last event was high bar, and the only thing I was thinking about was this gold medal. I want to get this gold medal. It was all about gold in my mindset. But I forgot to think, what do I have to do to win this gold medal? So it ended up with a bronze medal. I was really upset. I was disappointed because I knew there was so much more in the tank. And went back home. And I remember my dad said that the first 2 weeks, I was throwing this bronze medal just into the corner. Like every single day. Jeez. Because I was so disappointed and so pissed off that event. That was crazy, huh?
20-year-old, you know, I mean, how terrible. You know, you're only the third best in the whole world. You know, 20 years old, and it's just I'm trying to come up with a story that I can explain that makes me something that I ever was at the third best in the world, and I have nothing for you, man. I mean, it's just so amazing that, you know, you did all that at such a young age. And the story doesn't stop there. If you guys haven't been on Google yet and tried to really figure out who's sitting next to me here in Hastings, but, you know, we can maybe jump in between with the World Games. Were you about 22 on the next big platform that you were on? Or I guess what happened after that bronze in China?
Yeah, because of this disappointment in China, I felt like I have to work more. I have to work harder the next 4 years. It ended up with like a 100% burnout. I was just done, like physically and mentally. I was so exhausted. Went to World Championships, wanted to defend my title, couldn't do it, got injured there. Instead of understanding the signs of the body, I kept going. Then I gained a lot of weight during vacation. I felt like a sponge, which was just gained like 15 pounds or something. That was insane. Then I did a crazy diet to get rid of this of these pounds, but I lost all my strength and whatever next things coming up. And then at the end of this story, I tore my Achilles tendon in 2011, January 2011. And now I honestly have to say it was the best thing that could happen to me.
Okay.
Because finally my body got some rest.
Yeah.
Because from my mind, I was still like pushing. I have to go on. I have to work harder, whatever, because of that experience from Beijing. But with that injury, I had to rest. I had no chance, you know. Of course, I went to rehab every day, worked my ass off there like 8 hours a day and whatever. But it was so good for my body and also for my mind. And at this point, I started to reflect a lot, to think about what happened the last years. What can I do better? And from there on, I did a good rehab. I was back in competition like 8-9 months later.
Okay.
And then we got qualified for the Olympics. And then I was in a quite good shape for the Olympics in 2012.
Yeah. And I'm drawing a blank. So where were the Olympics at in 2012?
London.
Oh, that was London. Yeah. Okay. Yep. I remember a lot of the hype building up to that, and had some good friends that made the trip across the pond.
But, yeah, it was awesome there.
Well, and then I heard the stories, and we won't get into them, but you know, about the Olympic Village and everything else. It seemed like it was a pretty lively time
for
a lot of the participants.
Absolutely.
But so how did the Olympics go for you in 12 then?
Good and bad. I mean, I was in a quite good shape. I was still like, when it comes to tumbling, like floor exercise or like vault, I was still not at 100% with my Achilles, but good enough to be a good contender for a medal. In the all around with the team, we had no more chance. We got like seventh or something, I don't know, but was still okay to make it to the team finals, but no medal chance at all. And then in the all around, I had a chance for a silver medal again. I was mentally I thought I was mentally really good prepared because
okay.
we worked on a lot of things. And what I always said to myself was like, you're going to do it better than in Beijing, right?
Yeah.
So then I went into the competition and I did three mistakes, ended up on 15th place.
Oh, man.
So, and I was so disappointed and I didn't know why that happened mm-hmm. because I definitely wanted to do it differently than in Beijing, you know?
Right, right.
So I had, I think like five more days till the Hyper final. The first 2 days, training was bad, sleep was bad. Mm-hmm. I wasn't hungry at all. I felt weak in training, everything. So then I was sitting down with my uncle, who was my mental coach. Oh. So it's all like a family thing, yeah, like yeah. the older brother of my dad. Uh-huh. He is a mental coach. And we were working then in London. And we talked about everything and blah, blah. And then we figured out at some point what happened. Mm. Because with this phrase, I'm going to do it better than in Beijing.
Yeah.
I projected myself mentally back to Beijing.
Yeah, right.
And right away, I was just thinking about medals.
Yeah.
And not what do I have to do right, to get right. the medal.
Yeah.
So it was the same fucking thing again.
Yeah, you know? No, I get it.
So, and then I was so disappointed, of course, but at the same time, I felt like, oh gosh, I did exactly the wrong thing at that point. Mm. And, you know, tears came out of my eyes. They were like jumping out of my eyes. I never saw this before. And from that moment on, I felt like relieved. I was like, okay, now I know what to do. Yeah. You know, like mentally we said, okay, come back to London, be in the here and now, be in reality.
Yeah.
And then I had two more days till Hyper final. I worked out really well. I slept good. I was back in shape, back on focus. And then I went into a final and made silver this time.
Yeah.
Just a guy from the Netherlands, the Flying Dutchman. He was better than me on this day. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, he's a really good friend of mine. We know each other since 22 years now.
Okay.
And so I was really happy for him. I was really, really happy for myself that I made silver this time.
Yeah.
Even if I was so, so close to gold.
Yeah.
And my plan, honestly, was to retire after the Olympics in London.
Yeah.
I was 25. I thought, okay, you can probably do gymnastics till your 30s, but maybe your body gave you some signs with Achilles injury and stuff like that. But after the silver medal, of course, I had this kind of dream scenario in my mind, going from bronze to silver to gold.
Right.
And of course, I didn't think anymore about retirement. But the years between London and the next Olympics, Rio, they were quite hard as well.
Well, yeah. And it's very uncommon, you know, for an athlete, especially in gymnastics, to have such a long career, you know, and what we're talking about at lunch is, I mean, a lot of guys probably make it to their 30s, but they weren't at this world-class level as a young teenager, let alone, you know, I mean, like you said, at 12, you were basically physically there, you know, and so to have that type of career stretch on and I guess, you know, beyond London, what did this look like as you mentally tried to dial in and think about gold again at a serious level?
Yeah, absolutely. Mentally, I got stronger and stronger in these years between London and Rio. But physically, it got harder and harder.
Yeah.
If you come closer to your 30s, you really feel it in gymnastics. And at some points, it was more or less just maintenance, you know? It was not anymore about learning new skills and stuff, just bringing all together I've ever learned and just keep it. Mm-hmm. Keep it on that level. That was quite hard. Then I injured my shoulder already in 2012, I guess, after the Achilles rehab and stuff, because I had some struggles with my wrist or whatever, and I took a lot of painkillers, so I didn't feel my body at all,
right.
And I was doing a lot of strength training. Okay. So I got not the fully ruptured tendon already, but just like partial.
Uh-huh.
And of course, with that hard impact we have in gymnastics, especially on our shoulder, It never healed completely. It was always just like, a big issue for me. And from there on in the years 2013, 14, 15, the shoulder got worse and worse and worse. And I always had to work much more with my physiotherapist, with the doctors to be ready for the big competitions.
Yeah.
I managed it somehow, but then it came to the year 2016 where the next Olympics were. Mm. And then in February, like half a year before the Olympics, I made another big crash on high bar in training. And I felt like, okay, now it's over. It's definitely like a ruptured tendon over there. And then I went to MRI and you couldn't see, is the tendon still there or not? But it was clear there must be something wrong because I couldn't raise my arm higher than that, like halfway, you know?
Yeah.
And then I worked with a lot of doctors and everyone just said, yeah, we're going to put some cortisone in it and whatever. But I know that's just lasting for a few months or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's not really healthy at all. No. It's not healing. It's just taking, at this point, it's just taking the pain away.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was really struggling a lot with that. And at some point, it was like 3 months later, I was like, okay, I wasn't training at all the last 3 months. The longest vacation I had was like 2 weeks. Mm. Now I had like 3 months off. I have no idea if I can get back in shape.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So then at the end, I went to a really famous doctor in Germany. He's working with Usain Bolt since a lot of years with a lot of athletes. He also was the athlete, the doctor of the boxer Klitschko.
Oh, yeah.
Vladimir Klitschko. Yeah. So his reputation is huge in Germany, and that he's doing a lot of things without cortisone, just like on a plant-based structure and whatever. So I wanted to give up because I felt like I don't want to live anymore like this. I couldn't sleep without pain. I couldn't grab something from the top. Couldn't do anything with his shoulder. So I went to him, and he was right away checking me, checked every little tiny thing. And then at the end of the day, he was sitting in front of me and just said, you don't get surgery. You go to the Olympics. I was like, that's probably the last thing I wanted to hear now.
Yeah.
Because I was so annoyed by all the doctors and what they said, and nothing worked out and whatever. So, but I knew that he's a really good guy. So I wanted to give him a chance and said, how you want to do that?
Yeah.
And he said, we do it without cortisone, without this and this and this. And I was like, okay, that's a new thing.
Yeah.
Haven't heard of that. And then we tried all the stuff he wanted to do, and it didn't work out. Mm. I was still like, a few weeks later, I was still like not able to raise my arm. And then I told him, like, man, you know, it's like 3.5 weeks now till we have nationals.
Yeah.
We're definitely have to compete. If not, I'm out of the race.
Right.
And I told him, we have to do something. Something has to happen now that I'm pain-free, you know? And then he said, okay, if you allow me, I don't want to do that, but if you allow me, you get another injection of cortisone.
Okay.
I said, okay, we have not enough time anymore. So
let's do it.
Last chance, you know. He was like on the mental side, he was really good. He was motivating me. He kept me focused at some point. So I trusted him. So I said, okay, let's go. Last chance.
Yeah.
So injection, two days later, I woke up, no more pain in my shoulder.
Yeah.
Sitting down with my dad, talked about, okay, what's the plan?
Yeah.
We said, we don't going to do all around anymore. So we just look out for just two or three events. Of course, high bar.
Yeah.
It's really hard on the shoulder, but it's my best event.
Yeah.
And floor and vault. Mm-hmm. And then we went to nationals, and I've got the title on floor and high bar right away.
Okay.
So the head coach, he was like, oh, Fabi is still there, because he didn't hear from me for like 4 months or something. He thought, oh, I'm done. You know?
Yeah.
So then 2 weeks after nationals, we had Olympic trials, and then I was quite good in shape again.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, hit my routines, and then I got nominated for the Olympic team. And then we prepared quite good. But right before we went to the Olympics, my shoulder hurt again. I was like, oh gosh. We did another little injection of cortisone in it, but it didn't work anymore.
Mm.
Like every day got worse, and I just like reduced my training to the minimum, just the things I really need in competition, no more strength, additional strength or stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then somehow made it from day one to day two and so on. We got seventh with the team at the end. And then I made it to a hyper final as the best guy in qualification, which was awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, in men's gymnastics, we always kind of go into the qualification round with some strategy.
Okay.
We say we don't going to show full difficulty on our routines. Sometimes we do a little less.
Okay.
But this time I was going all in from the very first day because I knew that's my only chance. But some of the other guys, they didn't go all in.
Okay.
So I knew when it comes to the high bar final, even if I was the best one in qualification, that doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
You know, so I knew I have a chance for a medal, but the chance for winning the gold was not the highest,
okay,
you know, compared to the other Olympics.
Right. Yeah.
And then I went into the final. I was mentally really good prepared. I know I knew what to do, mm-hmm. and just hit a great routine. And I was going into this final and had to start with my routine. You know, yeah. there are like eight guys. I was number one. And then I had to wait like 25 to 30 minutes until mm-hmm. everyone was done.
Yeah.
Before I knew yeah. I made it, you know, right. that was horrible. To yeah. be down there like for 30 minutes and just like
felt like an eternity, I'm sure.
Yeah, that yeah. was crazy, you know. Mm. And like the Dutch guy, he was right after me in this final. Unfortunately, he had a big fall, so he was out of the game.
Yeah.
That made my chance to win the gold way higher yeah. in that moment. I felt sad for him because he's a good friend, good. And we both hope that we can be number one and two again yeah. after we did this in London. But anyways, for me it was of course, was a good thing. And then I just made it, you know,
yeah.
I was standing there getting the gold, fulfilling my dream. It was the most beautiful moment in my life.
Yeah. The best in the world. And you really proved it. And then just the story and the battle to even get there is just absolutely amazing, because were you 30 at that point?
Almost 29.
You're almost 29. So, I mean, literally, you know, 13 years of just Olympic history. And, you know, closer to 15 or 16 years at this highly competitive level. I mean, that's a long career for anybody.
Definitely.
I mean, you know, outside of LeBron James currently in the NBA, I don't know anybody that's played, you know, professional sports, at least currently, that's still getting after it. You know, 15, 16 years in the game yeah. is a long time.
Yeah.
And it's a lot on your body.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so did you end up having a procedure done after the Olympics on your shoulder?
So Olympics Rio was 2016. Yeah. I got surgery on my shoulder in 2017.
Okay.
Then did a nice rehab and then competed on a national level for one more year.
Oh, okay.
And then I retired.
Yeah.
And since then, I told you at lunch, I got yeah. more injured than before.
Yeah.
I've torn my ACL in a TV show.
Yeah.
Because I'm competing or participating in a lot of TV shows in Germany.
Yeah.
Then I tore the same tendon in my shoulder again during weightlifting. So I started with CrossFit 6 years ago. And then with weightlifting, I tore the same tendon again. I had another surgery on that.
Yeah.
Last year, I did Dancing with the Stars in Germany.
Yeah.
I hurt the shoulder again.
Oh, man.
This time was something different. But when I did the MRI, we saw that the fixed tendon
really
is not
healed.
There anymore.
Oh, okay.
You know, and but thankfully for that last injury on my shoulder, I didn't need any surgery anymore. And I'm pain free. I can do everything with that, you know. Just I need to be like aware of what can I still do and what is maybe a little bit too much.
Yeah.
And on the other side, as long as my muscles are strong,
yeah.
I feel really good.
I mean, you look like you're in great shape. You know, the funny thing is for me is my first set of either dumbbell incline or a flat bench, man, my shoulder snap, crackle, and popping. You know, and it's just that's one of the hardest things to heal. Mm. And I've never even had a real injury like you had to the shoulders. You know, but a shoulder is such a finicky thing, and you nailed it when you said you just sleep because there's no way to get comfortable. You're on your back, you don't have enough support. You lay on the other shoulder, there's no way you're going to lay on that shoulder, you know, unless you can find relief. But it's just, it's cool to hear that you actually are pain free because you've done a lot.
Yeah.
And I think all the orthopedic surgeons in Nebraska will tell you they love you guys doing CrossFit, you know, because that's hard on your joints and hard on your body. But I get it just for that. But I think what's really cool is we learned about Fabian a little bit earlier is the whole Dancing with the Stars thing and all the celebrity status. You know, a lot of folks don't quite realize, you know, in Germany, I don't even know how you could compare the level of, you know, your character and your role, you know, in society in Germany with any other American athlete. Because, you know, we had the greats like Michael Phelps, and I gave you my Michael Phelps story at lunch. I won't repeat it for the live stream. But, you know, a lot of them that have success in the Olympics and never really gets them into, you know, real celebrity or entertainment like it does with some of the European athletes back home. And when I first started, you know, researching more of your background, I was like, holy cow, this guy's probably bigger than David Hasselhoff is in Germany, you know, and so you got to do Dancing with the Stars. But not only do you do it, you know, just like in typical fashion, you excel at it. And I think that's a really cool story because what you end up getting like third place.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just in the type of involvement you had to do was, what do you say, like 7, 8, 9 hours a day of training.
Mm.
Like that's unreal.
Yeah, our record was like 10 and a half hours a day
Jeez.
Of training. Yeah, when I first sat down with the TV production before we started that project, they said, yeah, you can get yourself ready and like emotionally ready for like 8 hours training a day. Mm. And I thought, like, what are they talking about? When I was training on my highest level, I did in total like 6.5 hours a day maximum. Yeah. I thought, why should I do dancing for 8 hours a day? And then we had first day practice of Dancing with the Stars, and we did right away 9 hours. Mm. And then I got it right away. I understood why we need so much time, because you just have like at least 4 days of training to learn a full new dance. Mm. And the further you get in the show, at the end, you have to prepare 3 dances for one show. Jeez. You have to do 3 dances in 4 days.
Yeah.
And that's just like it's insane. A lot of steps. Yeah. You have to remember all the steps. Yeah. You have to work on the technique and get the rhythm for the music and everything. So yeah, it was really hard work to get there. But at the same time, you know, whenever it comes to TV shows that has something to do with sports, I'm always all in. I love that, you know. I'm still like, I have this athlete's mind still there, and whenever it comes to things like that, I'm all in. And it was such a great experience. We also went on tour, on dancing tour last fall. We had like in between 6 weeks 25 shows.
Wow.
Yeah, but good thing is you always do the same thing.
Yeah.
The same dances. It's not like the TV show that you have to perform every time a different dance. So that was quite cool. You get your rhythm. It's kind of a routine at some point.
Yeah.
But still, it was such a beautiful time. Great experience. I love that. And yeah, beside of that, there are so many other TV shows going on. But, you know, I always stick to gymnastics. I'm always still into it. Still doing gymnastics for myself. Whenever I see a high bar, I have to jump on it.
Yeah.
Like yesterday with my friend Andy, who's a colleague of you.
Yeah.
We went to Grand Island to Twisters Gymnastics.
Yeah.
And of course, even if they have a really kind of simple high bar there, I put my grips on, I jumped on it, did some giants and stuff. I just love this sport.
Oh, it's amazing. And just, you know, I think for me, you know, just thinking about it in a selfish way, you know, for all the other fellow Nebraskans that are into gymnastics, just that opportunity to meet and somewhat train with you yesterday. I mean, that's a once in a lifetime experience for these kids. And, you know, you've already done more for my part of Nebraska than a lot of people, you know, a lot of great athletes that even come from here, you know, most of them stay connected to Nebraska, but I mean, we're honored that you're even in our great state, but then to spend some time and, you know, help these kids out and just for those kids to be around a gold medal winner. I mean, that's just amazing. I mean, I'm sure it's something they'll remember for the rest of their lives. So
yeah, I think so too. I mean, as I said, I just love the sport, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, these kids probably they were born after my career.
Yeah,
you know, my career is now done for like 9 years, and some of them just were born, so they probably don't know me from my sports time. But still, when they hear the name or. Yeah. Even if they just Google or YouTube it right away, they see what I did. And then it's just like, okay, he's an Olympic champion. He knows so much about this sport. And I just love to be around, you know, athletes, young kids who really have this passion for the sport, because that was the only reason why I started with it. Just I had fun. I loved it. You know, I saw my older brother doing it. I wanted to do the same. I wanted to be better as he was as fast as possible.
Yeah.
That happened when I was 11. He was 15.
Okay.
I got better than him, but we've been together in the junior national team and stuff like that. So it was just like a crazy cool time for me, you know. It was just my, as a kid, that was my playground, the gymnastics gym, you know.
Right.
So, and when I see kids doing gymnastics and they enjoy it, whatever the level is, I don't care, you know.
Right.
I just want to help them out, even if it's more on a mental perspective.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, of course, yesterday we also worked technically and I gave them some other drills, how you can improve your twisting technique and whatever. Okay. But at the end, we were talking a little bit, and it's more about the mental thing, you know, because gymnastics is such a beautiful sport, but it needs so much work and so much like precise work. You have to be like really strict in the details and the technique.
Yeah.
But when you do kind of these things quite right in the beginning, then it makes life so much easier, you know.
Just all falls into place.
But it's like in everything, you know, whenever you have to relearn something, it's way harder to learn it right away in the best way, right?
Right, right.
So these are the things I tried to tell them yesterday, and just, you know, to enjoy the sport. Because when I was, as I said, like Beijing, the experience in Beijing, and also in London when I messed up the all-around final, I was not having fun anymore. I was just focusing on these medals and all this stuff, on expectations, on media. But the only thing what was, you know, like driving me through all these years was the passion to the sport.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have just to remember yourself to that. Yeah. And then you're good.
No, that's those are great gems of wisdom there for everybody paying attention, because, you know, there's so much to it. And I think a good way to boil this all down, especially with your career, Fabian, is just, you know, more so consistency, you know, and there's no shortcuts to anything that you want to do in life. You know, you can spend more time trying to find a shortcut than just going the hard route. And I think that's obvious. And it's really interesting because I meet and talk and discuss so many different athletes, and they all kind of boil down to the same thing. There's no shortcuts. There's no gimmicky diets you're going to do that's going to make you into something better. You know, it's just the repetition and the discipline. Absolutely. And I think for kids to see you and like, wow, this guy's real. You know, it's real life. And I can hear it from the horse's mouth. And, you know, for some of the team members at Tractor Tuesday, man, this guy's doing 10 hours a day dancing for Dancing with the Stars. And you're mad at me for working 8 or 9 hours a day. Come on, guys. You know, but it just goes to show, you know, you've got that in you. And it's an impressive story. And again, at Tractor Tuesday, we're just honored that, you know, you have so much time to even spend with us today. And for, you know, Mike Sabata that does sales for us, did he actually beat you?
Unfortunately, he did. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, table tennis is a big part of what we do at Tractor Tuesday. So come on down to Tractor Tuesday. We'll sell your tractor. We'll play ping pong. We might even start a laundromat upstairs next. But no, we have a lot of fun here at just, you know, working. But I'm sorry, we got a bunch of questions that popped up here. This is what I'm not going to ask here. Here's one. I kind of alluded to it. But would you say your celebrity status in Germany is greater than the great David Hasselhoff?
I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, I'm still an athlete. Uh-huh. I'm still a gymnast. I'm not a soccer player.
Okay.
If you would have like a soccer player from Germany sitting here,
yeah,
then probably he would say, yeah, I'm more famous than David Hasselhoff. But I mean, I made the best out of it.
Okay.
Still like a sport that is not like that popular in Germany, but throughout my really long career, and that I was like year by year pretty successful, and the media was always talking about me. Of course, my celebrity status is high, and since Dancing with the Stars has got way higher last year. But David Hasselhoff, I mean, he's a legend.
He's the guy. Yeah. No, we always pick on Andreas about him just to be funny, But yeah, and outside of English, you also speak French. Is that correct?
Yeah, quite okay. I mean, I've learned it in school. And of course, when I graduated from high school, then at some point, I didn't talk too much anymore. But with my colleagues from France, whenever we met at competitions, we spoke like French and English as a mix most of the time.
Okay.
So yeah, I still can do some French.
Yeah, your English is awesome. It's actually probably better than mine. So I think Do you ever have dreams in English?
Yeah, definitely. Like right now, I'm here in the States now since more than 2 weeks.
Okay.
And especially I've been to it's called Power Monkey Camp before in Tennessee. Probably the gymnasts know this place. It's like there's a Flip Fest summer camp, gymnastics summer camp. It's a huge property in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. The two owners also, U.S. Olympians, John McCready and John Riddlesberger. Really good guys, and they have built this huge property there with a lake and two big gyms. So they do gymnastics summer camps all year. But for two weeks in a year, one in the spring, one in the fall, we're there with Power Monkey Fitness, which is a company that offers gymnastics, weightlifting courses for CrossFit gyms or general for gyms.
Yeah.
And so I've been there for the camp the last week, and there were no one who speaks German. So I was talking just English all the time.
Okay.
Now here in Nebraska, I have my friend Andreas, who's a German guy.
Yeah.
And of course, we talk more German. But whenever I'm in a situation just talking English, then I also dream in English. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know how that worked. I'm embarrassed I never learned any other languages.
Well, like 2 years ago when the Olympics been in Paris and France, I was working there for German media.
Okay.
And of course, I was always trying to speak French with some people because... Yeah. You know, like police guys or securities, whatever, when you need some help and you don't know where to go.
Right.
Of course, at some point they we're able to talk English, but you know, many people say French people are impolite. They're rude.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think so. The only thing what is, they don't like when you're not trying to speak their language.
Oh, I see.
So if you just know maybe a few words, just say hello and whatever in French, they're so appreciating that. And then you can always switch to English. Yeah. So I always try to speak more French than English with them.
I see.
And at that point, I start to dream in French at some point in the night, because I was thinking about which words can I bring together to make this this all sense, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I like that. I like that feeling.
Really cool. Yeah, it's really cool. And they say the same thing about New Yorkers. Have you ever been to New York City?
Yeah, once or twice, but never seen so much of the city, just the competition hall and stuff.
Well, and all it is, you got to speak their language. And what I mean by that is I was a dumb Nebraskan. I went out there, I think it's my 30th birthday. I went to New York City. I'm wearing like crocodile belly boots, you know, the most stereotypical looking farm kid. And their language is cash money. So if you give the cab driver a $20 bill, they're, oh, I'll be your driver. You know, everybody else is swiping credit cards. Man, you got cash. You speak their language if you're in New York City. That's the secret.
Good to know.
But I don't know if I'd go back there again. It was cool in the vintage, but there's a lot of great places to see in the United States. But you've been to Tennessee. That's one of them. You know, it's a beautiful area.
Beautiful. Yeah. I've been to Ohio first with one of my friends. His family is there. And then we did a road trip, you know, through Kentucky, which is also like a beautiful like nature state. And then we went to Tennessee. But I'm probably going to be much more in New York City, because with Power Monkey, we're going to open up a gym there at the end of the year.
Yeah, nice.
In Tribeca.
Oh, yeah.
Right in there. I'm really excited to be there for the gym. But good to know that.
Like
good to know that cash is the language. Then I need to figure it out.
Just don't have too much of it in your pocket. But I guess what's your next step? Are you going back to Germany pretty soon?
Exactly. Yeah, tomorrow. I'll leave tomorrow. Tonight we go back to Lincoln. Andreas and me, we stay with another friend, and tomorrow I'll fly out from Lincoln.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and you got a wife and family and everything back in Germany?
Exactly. Yeah, my wife is at home with our dog. We have no kids yet. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're waiting for me.
Yeah, well, that's great, man. I don't know. There's just so many things. There's no shortcuts, I guess is a good way to put it. Yeah. You know,
absolutely.
You know, with all the injuries though, have you ever found any tricks of the trade that seem to help with inflammation or any injuries, or was it pretty straightforward? Just ice and
heat? I mean, all the science behind this, there's so much on the market right now.
Yeah.
Way too much for me. I always believe in just do the things that feels good for you. And what it don't mean is like take every medicine you can get or stuff That's stupid. Try to do it without and do it with training and smart things and stuff. But sometimes when it comes to maybe ice bath and sauna and whatever, there's so many studies around it that says it's good or not and blah, blah, blah. And I'm a fan always of like really listen to your body and do what feels best for you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like to do. I mean, when it comes in terms to nutrition and stuff, of course, you have to see what's your goal, you know?
Yeah.
Do you want to get stronger, leaner? Do you want to just lose weight and stuff like that? Then, of course, you have to adapt your nutrition a little bit. But it's always like a good mixture of everything, you know?
Yeah.
This healthy way of living, finding the balance of it, that's the thing. And not always just doing one thing like really extreme, you know?
That's
what happens most of the time. And then you have like, probably you have this kind of shortcut that you have a huge effect in a short time, but in terms of sustainability, it never works out.
Right. Yeah. And it's just, it's a good moral here and a good lesson for everybody watching is just there are no shortcuts. And, you know, we're talking to an Olympic gold medal winner. We're talking to somebody that's been through basically all the highs and lows you could ever imagine. And the one thing that got you to the mountaintop was just your consistent work ethic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Consistency is key.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to wrap it there. But for everybody watching, so thankful for our guest today. You know, TractorTuesday.com, we really are the people's and the farmer's champion. You know, and so when we have somebody that comes through Hastings, they'd love to check in and say hello to everybody at the team here at Tractor Tuesday, because we're really doing this for the farmers. We're doing this for the community. We're doing this for the people. So many people have their hands in their pockets. You know, it's like all your new friends, you know, when you find fame. You know, people are just looking at you as a way for them to make some sort of improvement in themselves. And that's not the case. At Tractor Tuesday, you can literally sell it yourself.
There's no middleman. There's no sales pitch. We don't even need a sales pitch. You know, it's like what I love to say about Nebraska is just like our old slogan for the state, for the tourism board, it's not for everybody. You know, you want to complain about it or talk about, oh, I drove through Nebraska once. Like, yeah, keep driving then if you got something slick to say. You know, and I think what we do is we're trying to build and we're trying to do it from the ground up. And I think that's what's so awesome about your career. And I remember your dad's name just because I pitched this name to my wife. I was like, man, Wolfgang is a strong name. And I don't have Rachel talked into it yet. So we'll see. We're going to try for another kid here maybe in a year, but I'll put that on the list. But maybe Fabian will be right up there on the top of the list. So yeah. It's a good name.
I would appreciate that.
Well, an Olympic champion. I don't know how you could go wrong. But for everybody within Tractor Tuesday, within the whole family, make sure to like, subscribe, do all the things all the other fake influencer types do. I just got out of the field. I was done planting my corn at about midnight last night. So we're here doing a live show just because. But I love to say it, and I hope I can say it just as good again. But for Fabian Buschen, is that good enough? Or
Hambuschen.
Fabian Hambuschen, our guy with Tractor Tuesday. I'm Zach Bosley. For everybody in the audience, take care and be consistent. That's the key. Till the soil